Hello, and welcome to the Mark Groves Podcast. You know, what's often not spoken about is this correlation of the mind to the body, the psychosomatic, right? And there is the study of things like psychoneuroimmunology, so this connection between the brain and our psychology and our immune response and our endocrine system and all these different things that we know they're all connected, but in a way, disciplines have separated them. And so we often all seek some form of mastery in one specific thing, like a specialization in medicine, for example. Of course, there's value to these things. But it seems kind of strange that it is more of a modern thought that the thoughts you have, the feelings you're experiencing in your body, the traumas you've been through, would shape actually your body's response to life, right? And so when we have things like chronic pain, or we have things like fibromyalgia or autoimmune experiences, that often, not always true, but often when we turn towards things like traditional medicine, there's no answers. And there can feel like there's a very large amount of frustration with ourselves if we're going through those experiences, and frustrations with the systems, because the systems, it's in a way we feel like they don't understand what's really going on within us, right? Which isn't a problem with us. It's a problem with that the systems just don't have that lens. And there's a lot to, of course, unpack in what shaped traditional medicine, etc. And that's not why I'm here today for this conversation. I wanted to talk to someone who is a psychotherapist, also a natural lifestyle coach, and has really looked at all these layers of how the body works and the systems in order to heal herself. As you know, I'm very fascinated with relationships, of course, to people, but I'm especially fascinated with the relationship we have with ourselves, because often the things that we have with people will manifest in our own physiology, and the experiences we're having in our bodies are really expressions often of our response to an environment or things that have happened in our past. And so how do we let go of our past? How do we trust in our body's natural ability to heal? Is, you know, this really changes the framework that there's something wrong with you, that there's something right with you. And just that shift in perspective is really healing, because it sees the brilliance in your response instead of the brokenness. And may that be the first part of the journey of healing oneself. So with that said, I'm so excited to welcome my guest, Samfire Hayes, on the podcast today. So before we dive in, wherever you're listening to this, make sure you hit that subscribe button. It's an amazing way to support the show. You don't have to spend anything. You just hit that button and it gets more episodes in your ears and also moves the show up the ranks. And if that's something that you're like, I don't want to do that, just go give it a 5-star review, written review, wherever you can. That's really helpful too. So I appreciate all your support and look forward to you hearing this episode. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark Groves Podcast. Today I'm joined by Samfire Hayes. And I was thinking, I'm like, man, you have a lot of credentials. So I was like, what are they all in my brain? Okay, what are your credentials?
Okay, so I'm a psychotherapist and a natural lifestyle coach.
Right. And I was like, what is that second one? That was the brain. It was like natural lifestyle coach. Mm-hmm. Okay, I know we're going to get into the depths of what that even means and the journey of what brought you here. And for those of you watching the video, you could see that Sam has a different chair than I do. And so if it was up to Sam, which it's not that it's not, if you had really made the claim, I'd be into it. We'd be doing this podcast on the floor.
Yeah.
Right? Or you'd be sitting on the floor and I'd be in a chair. But either way, you'd be on the floor. Mm-hmm. And so we can tell the story of why that is true.
Yeah.
But maybe let's roll it all the way back. And how many years would we go back to say, like, where was the beginning of the journey of you stepping into helping people with managing pain holistically and natural lifestyle? Because when people hear that, they probably think like patchouli and putting a little leaf over their, over there, like Adam and Eve. So yeah, where do we start?
So I would claim the title of natural lifestyle coach only very recently, really, because, yeah, up until quite recently, I was still struggling with pain myself. Mm-hmm. So it's probably been about 2 years since I would say I've been recovered. And so the way in which I recovered was through natural, holistic methods. And so that's what I teach now through my work. And I have worked as a psychotherapist for the last 3.5 years, 4 years. And my work has merged now into bringing in that natural lifestyle coaching. Yeah, so.
What led you down that path, even to the psychotherapy and the natural lifestyle? Like, where was sort of the, what was the path to the bottom?
So my own journey with chronic pain. Yeah. So that started 13 years ago. Yeah, my first pregnancy with my daughter. So she's 13.
Yeah.
Yeah, up until that point, I was a fairly active person. I had an active job. I liked to run. I wasn't overly healthy, but I was, you know, healthy enough and fit. And then during my pregnancy, I started to have issues with my pelvis. I started to have a lot of pain in my lower back. And around the same time, I had a whole bunch of trauma stuff that happened. My father died in very traumatic circumstances. When I had my daughter, all the doctors said, oh, the pain will go away. They called it pelvic girdle pain. There's like certain pains that you get in pregnancy because everything kind of relaxes and your pelvis can go out of alignment and that kind of thing. Yeah. So they said, once you've had the baby, it'll all go away. But it never did. And then 2 years later, I was pregnant with my son and it got worse then. I had a lot of pain in between the pregnancies, but I was kind of managing it, but it wasn't great. And then with my son, it got really bad. I was pretty much bedbound by the end of that pregnancy. Yeah.
Wow.
The last month of that pregnancy was horrific. And I was, pretty much bedbound. Like, even though I was pregnant, I was on a lot of pain medication, actually.
While you were pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And when you say pain medication, do you mean like opiates?
Codeine,
Codeine.
I was prescribed codeine for a very long time.
Wow. So when you're thinking about post your daughter's birth, the daily pain that you're suffering from as your son is like on the way to being pregnant with him, and then mm-hmm. while you have him, out of 10, like, what is the pain level? Is it getting like 3, 4, 5, 6? Is it getting worse?
It varied. So I had very up and down pain. So sometimes I would have, sometimes it'd be like 2, 3 pain. It'd be like, oh, there's a bit of a niggle in my back. It sort of hurts. And yeah, I can kind of get around my daily business. And then other times it would be up there with like writhing, like proper,
like
a 9, 10, like I'm screaming. Like, it's so painful. Yeah, it would vary. And at the time, it seemed to make no sense. It seemed to be quite random. Probably if I were to track it back now, there would be a correlation between how stressed I was or how, what had happened in the day. But at the time, it seemed very, I mean, the pain. So when I was pregnant with my son, that's when it got really, really bad. And then it did ease off a little bit after I had him. But then I was very immobile for a long time because I was so scared of the pain. I didn't really do very much. And then 2017, I herniated my disc in my lower back, which was that's probably the worst time. And that was probably, now looking back, was probably from a lack of movement because I just didn't do anything. I didn't really go anywhere or do any movement because I was so scared of being in pain. And then I spent 8 months just on the sofa. Just didn't really go anywhere. I'd take the kids to school, but that was it. And I just literally spent 8 months on the sofa taking really strong painkillers, drinking. I drank a lot of alcohol to try and help with the pain. But yeah, that was probably the worst time, was 2017.
So when you're going and seeing doctors at this time,
mm-hmm.
are you going to like a pain clinic? Do they have those in England?
I saw so many. I mean, I was quite proactive. And fortunately, I had enough money to see private doctors. The healthcare system in the UK is, we get free healthcare, free on the point of delivery. So you go and see a GP, or you go and see a pain specialist within the National Health Service, and that would be free. But you can also pay to see a private doctor, and you would generally see a private doctor a lot quicker.
Yeah, it's like Canada. Yeah.
And yeah, so I threw money at everyone.
You're like, figure this out, fix it.
Yeah, and not just pain clinics, but like acupuncture and physiotherapy and osteopathy and chiropractic. Like I would go any type of specialist that works with the body and pain, you name it, I've probably been to see them. I spent a fortune on like gadgets and all sorts of things to try and make me better. But I did see a lot of pain specialists, rheumatologists who kind of specialize in inflammation in the body and autoimmune, because I had all sorts of tests. I had MRIs on my brain because at one point they thought maybe I had lupus because I had a bunch of, or maybe even MS. You know, there were a whole load of overlapping symptoms. Yeah, at the end I was seeing a neurosurgeon because they wanted to give me a spinal fusion on my lower back.
Where that disc was herniated?
Where I had the degeneration.
Are they diagnosing you at this point with like fibromyalgia and chronic pain? And
yeah, so the diagnosis that I had were fibromyalgia, degenerative disc disease, and severe hypermobility spectrum disorder.
Wow.
And yeah, the language that's used, like the diagnosis, I say severe because that's what they put on my diagnosis, severe hypermobility spectrum disorder. And it's like, that's not helpful for right. me, because then it just puts you in that frame of mind of like, oh my God, I've got this severe thing wrong with me. If I'm honest, when I got the diagnosis of fibromyalgia, it was a real relief, because finally the doctors, because up until that point, it was kind of, well, there's nothing really wrong with you. And I kind of felt like I was making it up and no one really believed me, because on the outside I look fine, right? And because my pain was variable, some days I would be not too bad and then other days I would be like not able to move. And also it was quite random. So I might be out walking with someone, you know, gone to the shops or something. And then all of a sudden it would hit. Because I used to get this pain in my pelvis that would like in my glute area, where it would just suddenly come on and it would just be this really sharp pain on weight bearing. So I'd put my foot down to walk and it would just shoot this pain and it would just take me out. Like I wouldn't be able to stand. Yeah. And it's like someone's just stabbing me in that area. And so then I would have to kind of just stop and I wouldn't be able to walk anywhere. I'd have to
wait for
it to ease off. Yeah, yeah. And there were times where I was kind of stuck, I'd just be stuck in the street. And I had mobility aids that I did use. I had crutches and at one point I had a mobility scooter, but I didn't like to use them because they were quite embarrassing.
Yeah.
Because I was only in my 30s. There's a lot of kind of, I felt like lazy stigma that's attached to a mobility scooter or like it's not that bad, you don't really need it.
Yeah, there's not a lot of compassion for it, I think. No. You know, it's like when you've never had back pain, for example, you're like, oh, come on. Like just if you actually got off the couch, you know, but you don't realize that. Like I've had that type of shooting pain on weight bearing after I hurt my back, my SI joint, and then it would just like, it was so inflamed. Mm-hmm. I tried to do some stretches from the internet, which did not make it better. So I take ownership for that. But I remember every time I'd put my foot down, it would shoot up and I was like, ah, so I had to lay down and be taken care of, which was vulnerable for me.
Yeah.
And when I used to work as a pharma rep, the first drug I ever sold was for irritable bowel syndrome. Mm-hmm. And where I worked with GPs and then eventually I got promoted and I worked with like gastroenterologists mainly and internists, but mainly gastroenterologists. And some OBGYNs, because the nature is like usually more female with IBS. And what I noticed in this is there was a lot of overlap with fibromyalgia. Mm-hmm. So these people that I noticed, the GPs would feel very frustrated about working with them because there was no solution. So it was like, it was joked about that IBS was this diagnosis of exclusion, much like fibromyalgia. Like, we don't know what it is, so here's this
thing. In the absence of knowing what's wrong, I'm just going to give you this label.
Yeah, and which is really like, we can't help you, and there's something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like, at that time, it was like 2002-ish. Mm-hmm. And so there was no conversation. Well, first off, the microbiome didn't even exist to gastroenterologists then, and not likely until recently for some. Mm. But there was no concept of like the psychosomatic mm-hmm. connection of like emotion, trauma, you know, to like pelvic things to, you know, logically, I think we understand that. And I think most people get that now. It would make sense if you've been, if you're in hyper emotionally traumatic states or have experienced that but never explored it or healed it. That the, you know, as the, like the, one of the most popular selling books from Basil van der Kolk, what is it, When the Body Keeps the Score?
Body Keeps the Score.
Yeah. And Gabor Mate, his book.
When the Body Says Stay.
Yeah. Yeah. So these, like, Basil's book is like one of the most popular.
That's the book that changed my life. Reading that book, and I read that book when I was training as a psychotherapist.
Yeah.
And that I was still having a lot of pain. And I suddenly went, oh, this is my life.
Like, I'm not broken.
Yeah.
I literally couldn't be more of a super fan of Cozy Earth products. Ever since the first day that Cozy Earth sheets graced my skin, and I don't say that as an exaggeration, I was staying at my sister-in-law's, I got in the bed, and I was like, what is happening? It was one of the most cozy, and I don't even mean the pun there, experiences I've ever had. You know that feeling when you're so comfortable in bed and you're just like, what is happening here? What are the ingredients that are making this experience? And so every single bed, every single house, every single rental I've ever been in always has Cozy Earth sheets. And if I gift them to people, oh my Lord. And now they're making pajamas. Are you kidding me? You're walking around with the same feeling. They've got joggers. All of it is next level. Seriously. So not only do they make my home feel like a sanctuary, I bought these bamboo pajamas for my mom and my wife as Mother's Day gifts, and they are so excited about it. So if you're looking for a Mother's Day gift for a special mama, or you're just looking to treat yourself, because hey, yo, treat yourself. You want a cooler sleep, you want unmatched softness, you want everyday luxury of a premium loungewear, do not wait another day. Use the code MARK and you get 40% off these pajamas or any of their products. I mean, you probably want the sheets after I'm talking about them. Greatest Mother's Day gift. Take care of it. Check. You're going to thank me later. Go to markgroves.com/cozyearth and use the code MARK and you get 40% off.
Because up until that point, I'd seen so many doctors and no one, I even saw a pain psychologist who you would have thought would have brought this, you know, to my attention.
Isn't that crazy?
But
a
no
pain
one,
yeah, psychologist,
pain psychologist
doesn't bring that work.
She did
in that
not
book.
Say to me, "Oh, you have PTSD and chronic pain. Those two things are linked." There was no discussion around that at all. The pain psychologist was working with me on pacing, and on in fact, actually, she brought in my ex-husband, and we did kind of almost marriage counseling in because pain was like a third person in my marriage that just came in and just fucked everything up.
Right.
And my ex-husband did not know how to support me. I wasn't a very nice person a lot of the time because I was in pain. And so,
you become a dependent instead of taking care of. Mm-hmm. That's hard.
I wasn't keeping up my end of the bargain of like when we got married of what I was going to do. But yeah, so the pain psychologist brought in my ex-husband at the time and it kind of just turned into marriage counseling rather than actually focusing on my pain. But yeah, no one ever said to me, you know, oh, we have PTSD. The PTSD and my pain were not linked in terms of like, I didn't have a car accident that was traumatic or, you know, there wasn't like a big traumatic thing that caused the physical.
Impact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in that sense, there wasn't like a linking, but my physical health, the pain that I had during my pregnancy was at a time. I'm vulnerable from being pregnant and, you know, right. all the things that go and then having a new baby, but then also the trauma that happened with my family that led to me having PTSD, that was all around the same time. Essentially what Basil says, you know, Basil van der Kolk with his book is that, you know, the trauma stays in the body and there's manifestations of, you know, they've linked PTSD to all sorts of autoimmune conditions. And there's loads of like examples in that book that I was reading and going, oh my God, okay. So there's something here. And then I then started to learn the neuroscience around pain. Like you say, my body's not broken. It's doing exactly what it's supposed to do. And up until that point, I was like, my body's broken. Why? Like no one else has got this pain.
Right.
Like I'm in my 30s and I'm going and buying a mobility scooter. This is rubbish. Like what? Why? And
must have been kind so of, frustrated.
It was. And
yeah,
the doctors are telling me, you're going to be disabled for the rest of your life. Like that.
There's no way out. This is it.
You have fibromyalgia. I remember when I herniated my disc and I called my doctor and I was like, oh my God, this pain is insane. Like I can barely even stand up. And he just said, well, you have fibromyalgia, you're going to get pain flare-ups. And I'm like, this is something else. This is not, there's something seriously wrong because like this is overnight. My pain is just suddenly, and he completely dismissed me. And then I had to pay privately to go and get a scan. And then it told me, okay, yeah, you do have a physical issue. And then actually I was really excited when a physical thing showed up because fibro was the absence of anything being wrong with you. Here's the diagnosis. And now suddenly, oh, there's something on an MRI that shows that I've got pain. And shows why there's a problem and how we can fix it. And then went down the route of various like pain injections and that kind of stuff, which never really helped up until the point where they offered a spinal fusion.
So explain to people what a spinal fusion is.
So essentially they would fuse with metal your discs together basically to kind of stop.
Where that issue was happening.
Between two of my discs, there's like, you're supposed to have like fluid in between the, and so a lot of that is removed and there's kind of rubbing bone on bone. So the fusion will stop that rubbing. But you know what's really interesting? I had that scan in 2017 and it showed degeneration in my L5-S1, which is right at the base of the back. And my neurosurgeon said, oh, you've got a spine of an 80-year-old. That's what he said to me. And he said, you need a spinal fusion. And I decided at the time, I'm so grateful that I made this decision, but I just thought that's not for me. That sounds too, like it's really invasive back surgery.
And permanent.
Yeah. And I'm like, I don't think fusing bits, and I read up on it. And once you have a fusion, it can have a knock-on effect to the, because your spine's not then moving properly. So then it can have a knock-on effect to the rest of your discs.
It's just like dominoes.
Most people that have back surgery will have repeated back surgeries.
Wow.
So I was like, okay, this doesn't feel right to me. So then I made all the changes that I did and we'll go into that for sure. But I recently had an MRI on my back, right? Kind of out of curiosity, I was doing some proactive health stuff and I didn't tell the doctors or the radiographer about pain because I'm not in any pain now or I have very little pain. They reviewed it and they called me and they said, you know, do you have any pain in your lower back? And I said, no, not really. And they said, there's nothing to worry about. And the scan from 6 months ago and the scan from 2017 are exactly the same. So looking at the scan, there's the same physical deterioration in that area. The only difference is I'm not in pain. 2017, they're saying I need massively invasive back surgery. Now they're saying, no, don't worry about it.
Wow.
Based off of the same scan.
Wow.
Pretty much.
I remember interviewing this guy who had, I believe it was problems with his knees, his legs. And when he was talking to the doctor said, and he was a high level athlete. And the doctor said, oh, you just have bad luck. Like this is an inherited issue with your, I think it was his shin. I think he broke his leg, like sprinting or his hip. Something happened. And the doctor was like, oh, you just have like bad luck. Like you inherited this. And he was like, so this has nothing to do with nutrition or my lifestyle. And he's like, nope. And he's like, wait, what? When he heard that, he was like, that can't be true. Like to dismiss that it's nothing to do with my lifestyle. And then he went on to change his lifestyle and everything and then be able to not suffer from the things that he had originally suffered from. And so it's like, it's interesting that when you were offered the surgery, and it sounds like, you know, things are starting to be like, oh, I actually have an issue. Okay, so there's actually a reason for this pain, which I would imagine is like, as you said, quite liberating. To be like, I can label something instead of what's wrong with me and it's psychosomatic and it's all
I
in
really
my
wanted.
Head.
I wanted, when this doctor said to me, you need a spinal fusion, I was like, I felt so validated. I was like, yes, there is a reason. They're like, I'm not making it up. This is really like, so there was almost an element of pleasure that I took in receiving that news. Cause then I was able to go and tell my ex-husband, here you go. Like at the time he was still my husband. Here you go. There is something wrong with me. And I could tell my friends, yeah, here's something wrong with me. And kind of, there was almost a kind of attention seeking that went around that because it was like, my pain was my entire identity. And yeah, so there was almost like a sick pleasure in it.
Well, how could it not be at that point?
Yeah.
You know, it's like consumed every waking moment, trying to figure out how to not have it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, maybe unconsciously curious your thoughts of like it being the way that you have people, like you need people then.
Yeah.
And so it like unconsciously, was there any part of you that it was unconsciously like trying to keep people close?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. There was attention seeking for sure. There was like, look how much pain I'm in. Like this is because I didn't have much else that I could seek attention.
Yeah.
Like I couldn't really do things for people. And yeah, so if I could get attention through my pain. So it kind of became this kind of like perverse thing. People definitely distance themselves from me because I didn't go out and do stuff. So then people don't invite you to things, right?
Yeah.
I never got invited.
She's not going to come anyway.
Because I'm not going to come anyway.
Yeah.
And then like I would see other people like have their friendships go off and they'd be doing stuff. And, you know, because Facebook would show me all my friends doing stuff and they'd never invite me places. Or if they did, I wouldn't be able to go because it would be too energetic or whatever. So there was like a big loneliness thing.
You must have felt very alone in the pain, like just in mm-hmm. the experience of like no one's validated it.
No.
You know, like no one said, oh, you have had severe trauma. That makes sense.
Mm. But I also, I mean, I became so much my pain and my trauma that it's all I ever spoke about. I must have been really annoying. I must have been really annoying. It's like can we just come over and have a conversation that doesn't involve like how much pain you're in? Like it was literally all I would talk about because it was all it was my whole world. I just didn't have anything outside of that bubble. You know, I would wake up in the morning sometimes and think, can I walk to the shower this morning? Like that would be one of the first, like how much pain am I in? Can I walk to the shower okay this morning? When you're living on that level, like that's the first thing you think of. Not like, is the sun shining or like, what's my plans for today?
Morning.
Like when that's deep like breath. Constantly like, am I going to be able to get the kids to school today? Am I going to be able to make dinner? Am I like all of the things
that... Well, this nervous system is in hypervigilance.
Absolutely,
which makes sense if you've experienced trauma and then you end up really essentially being in a freeze state.
Mm-hmm.
And then your nervous system, like in the ACE study, the Adverse Childhood Experiences study, the more cumulative stressors someone has, mm-hmm. the more likely they are to develop autoimmune disorders. I was recently writing an article about woundology, mm-hmm. which is a term from Carolyn Mace, where she talked about how she was in a workshop and she noticed this woman before she learned anything else about her. The first thing the woman said was, I'm a survivor of child incest.
Mm-hmm.
And she then went on to like, and I'm part of a survivor group and da da da. And Carolyn was like, wait, what? Like, I don't even know anything about you. That's the first thing.
Like, hi.
Yeah.
Hello. How are you doing today?
Right.
Yeah.
And she started to then, because of course it like got into the front of her consciousness, much like how you buy a car and then you see everyone with that car, you know, mm-hmm. you're like, no one has this. This is so unique. And then there's one. And then she was saying that she started to notice it in so many of her workshop attendees that they would lead with it
mm-hmm.
and that they were unconsciously hooking in to use it as a way of power. And I think a lot of like where my predisposition is to people pleasing and to that's more my survival strategy is to like become the chameleon. I recognized where in me that still lived when I was reading. I'd read it years ago, but I was like recently listening. The algorithm was getting me on YouTube because I listened to this thing from Carolyn Mace where she said, no one wants to hear about your suffering. Maybe once, because there's a very important part of the healing process where things need to be witnessed and validated. And like, who knows how quickly you would have moved through those things had someone been with you in that space.
Mm.
But then when it doesn't get properly witnessed, then we just keep leading with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I listened, then the algorithm was like, here's one from Tony Robbins. And Tony Robbins was like, no one wants to hear about your pain.
Yeah.
They want to hear about hope. They want to hear about possibility.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's like very important for anybody listening or watching who feels like they're staying in a chronic state that everyone has the right to the part of the process of witness and validation.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so easy to get stuck there.
Yeah.
Especially when a system that's traditional that you turn towards doesn't understand
mm-hmm.
how trauma is correlated to these things.
Yeah.
God, imagine how many people would be moving around doing stuff had someone just been like, hey, you're not broken. This is the appropriate response.
Mm-hmm.
So you get offered this spinal fusion.
Yeah.
You're like, no. Like part of you is like,
part of me was like, because here's this thing, which, do you know, so the conversation with the neurosurgeon kind of went like this. He said, I have a lot of patients, this changes their life, right? So they're out of pain and they're living their lives and it's great. I was like, okay. For some people, it doesn't do anything for some people, it doesn't really work and they're still in the same amount of pain.
That's great.
And I'm like, okay.
That's a good story.
And then he said, and I do have to let you know that sometimes it can make it worse and I've had people end up permanently in a wheelchair. And I'm like, okay.
That's not a lot of great options. Yeah. There's one there that sounds awesome.
And I'm like, how do I know which one I'm going to be in? And I had two small children at the time and I'm thinking, I don't want it to be worse. Like I can just about cope with it now. Yeah, I don't want to, there's no way I could think about this being worse, you know? Although there was a time that and this might sound really harsh and I don't mean to insult anybody by saying this, but there was a time where I wished that I would be paralyzed because it was like the pain was so bad. So there was a part of me that was like, oh, maybe I'd be paralyzed in the surgery and then like my pain will go away and I can just be in a wheelchair and not be in pain.
That seems like a natural response, you know? Like I can hear you in wanting to protect people from that truth, but I think anyone trading spots with you in that moment, that would be a natural, you know? It's like when I've talked to people about being in highly dysfunctional relationships and they fear leaving, you know, often they'll have a history of wishing their partner would just die.
Mm-hmm.
And then they feel guilty about that and they, you know?
Yeah.
But it's like sometimes that's just a natural thought.
It felt like there were also times that I wished that I was dead.
Yeah.
And lots of times where, you know, thoughts would pop into my head, you know, I've got a bottle of morphine here that I've been prescribed. Like it would be very easy for me not to be here anymore. But
what kept you going?
My children.
Yeah, your children.
Yeah.
Was there any time when you had an awareness of your existence with chronic pain and how it was impacting them, like one that sticks out?
God. Actually, I have memories of like where it felt really bad and like I don't have shame on it around it now because I've worked through it. But at the time, I felt like a crap parent. I felt awful. I actually have like some memories of it being a positive thing of where it's really impacted them in a great way from like when I started to recover and a lot of the methods that I was using. So one of the first things that I started to learn was mindfulness and I started teaching that to my children.
So you started meditating around them?
I started meditating with them and they would meditate with me and I have this...
That's so cool.
Yeah, I have this beautiful memory of my son. Where I lived was like, there were two floors. So to get up, the kids were in the attic. So to go up and put them to bed, it would be up in the attic floor. And I remember getting to the top of the stairs and I just got to the top of stairs and I collapsed and I was just crying my eyes out. I was just had a day and I was in so much pain. And I just was like, oh. And my son was 3 at the time. And I'd been practicing all this mindfulness. We've been doing Headspace.
The stuff Andy.
On there. Yeah.
Hello, this is Andy.
Well, they have like kids meditations on there. And so we'd sit and do the kids ones. And my son came over to me and I was like in this heap on the floor. And he just said to me, Mummy, you need to breathe in like this. And breathe out like this. And I was just like, what? My 3-year-old
created a little Yoda.
Is coming up.
Yeah.
My son is like a little sage. He comes out with the most amazing things. He's going to be a healer of some kind. And I truly believe that it's come from seeing his mum being in so much pain. Because even at the age of 3, he was able to see me suffering and reach into a tool that I'd given him and serve that back to me.
That's so cool because he's not taking responsibility for your pain, which is so profound because most kids would be like, how do I help mom? You know, do I hold her? Do I comfort her?
Mm-hmm.
And instead he's saying, here's the tool.
Yeah, he fed it straight back to me. Yeah, you taught me this.
He's like the Buddhist teacher with the stick, you know?
But he does this now. Like recently, like I was having a moment because I still have moments. I'm a human being. Yeah, I was just, not feeling great. And he just came over to me and he went, I just want to remind you that this isn't permanent.
How old is he now?
He's 10.
Damn.
So this isn't permanent and all feelings are welcome. So if you're feeling sad, just be with the sadness. And I'm like...
He's 10.
Yeah.
Dropping wisdom like this?
Yeah. And I say now, I regularly will say to people, I feel so grateful for the pain. Like I was in pain for over 10 years. But I feel gratitude to it. And sometimes people are like, what? Like, yeah. That doesn't make any sense. But I feel gratitude for where I am now because I am the happiest. I'm thriving. I feel like I'm, like, even though I had 10 years of pain, I feel 10 years younger. Like,
yeah.
I feel younger now than I have my entire adult life. And
that's such a great thing.
I'm really happy and I get to help other people. And yeah, I'm thriving. And I feel like the pain showed me parts of myself that I needed to look at that weren't even really linked to the pain necessarily, but like how I relate to people and how I communicate. And so, yeah, I got that. But then also my children, particularly my son, because I think he was a bit younger when I kind of started these processes. So he was more accepting of it. And yeah, the things that he comes out with and the way that he has this compassion that I just feel it comes from watching a mother that's suffering. Yeah, so
that's really
there's
powerful.
Some really good stuff that's come out. And I choose to focus on that because, you know, the mum that was screaming at her kids or, you know, throwing the iPad at them and saying, go away because I can't play with you. You know, that mum, she was doing the best she could at the time she could, and she didn't have the skills to be able to do anything different. Yeah, and so I try not to judge her and I try to
send... Well, what's the value of it?
Send her some compassion and just say, my God, that was an awful time of your life. And if you could have parented differently, you would have parented differently. But actually, like, your son turned out pretty okay. And maybe, yeah, has more emotional capacity and more compassion than had you not gone through that journey.
We also watched you rise.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, well, yeah. And this is like, I have a 13-year-old daughter. So for her to see me rise and become the woman that I am and not take any shit and I speak up for like what I want and, you know, that kind of stuff. So for her to see that, and that does all come from exploring the pain and going to where I, you know, the personality type that I have now and the fire that is behind me as a person, that's all come from that. And so she's got to witness that. And so she's now a young woman navigating her identity. And she was always a bit more resistant to the mindfulness stuff. So like she didn't want to sit and do the meditations and, she'd be like, oh, mom, I don't want to breathe.
How old was she then?
She was five, six. So she's like 2.5 years.
She probably related to your suffering differently too. You know,
yeah.
When they're older, it's like when kids experience the same parent, but they have such a different experience of the parent. And it's like, do you think she resented in any way your inability to show up? Or like, was there a different kind of feeling that she had more access to because of her age?
I don't know. I've not really had that conversation with her. I just know that, yeah, she was more resistant to, she still is more resistant to the practices that I do. But I remember I saw Peter Crone on a podcast and he said, your children will inevitably fail at listening to you, but they will succeed in becoming you.
Mm.
And so I was like, okay, I'm going to stop trying to shovel this down her throat. I'm going to stop like trying to make her sit and do meditations. And I'm just going to do it. Just going to do it myself. And, you know, if I'm out and I'm feeling upregulated, I'll start to breathe and use the skills that I've built up. And she'll just observe me doing that. And I see her now, every now and then she'll come to me and she'll be like, can you teach me how to breathe? Or I'm feeling really, really stressed. What can I do? And she comes and asks me.
Oh, wow.
And that's happening more and more now since I've eased off and not been like, sit and meditate. Oh, I keep whacking the microphone. Yeah, since I've eased off and just embodied it myself. And so she sees me doing it. Yeah, she comes and asks me now.
So when you decide not to get the surgery, you start mindfulness. So what are the steps that lead you to getting to what, you know, you said a couple of years ago, you developed being pain-free?
Yeah. So the first thing was, I started to practice mindfulness. So that came from my ex-husband was like, you need to just go somewhere because you are just driving everybody nuts and we need a break from you. Just go somewhere. And I'm like, where am I going to go? Like, I'm in all this pain. I'm like, I don't want to go and sit in a hotel room on my own. And so I was looking up yoga retreats, but then I couldn't really do yoga. So I was like, what am I going to do? And then I found this thing called mindfulness, which I hadn't come across before. And I was like, oh, what's this? And there was this mindfulness retreat that was happening for like a 5-day thing. And I thought, okay, I'm going to go and learn about this. And then, yeah, I went on the retreat, and just the people that were leading the retreat, who are still my friends now, just offered me so much compassion. They listened. They taught me. So when we were talking about anxiety, they were saying that it wasn't, I'd been taking antidepressants because I had anxiety as well. And I've been taking antidepressants. I've been taking stuff to get rid of my anxiety. And they were like, no, we need our anxiety.
Right. It's such a perfectly adaptive response to a circumstance.
They were like, our anxiety is there for a reason. We need it. It's our friend. And I was like, I just burst into tears. This is the first time anyone has given me permission to be anxious.
Yeah.
Because all the doctors want to get rid of it.
Right.
And
you inherited it.
Yeah. Like, oh, get rid of the anxiety. It's a bad thing. And so that was the very first time that anyone had said, this is working for us, not against us. This is, there's a reason why we have this. And then kind of around the same time was when I read The Body Keeps the Score. And so I was like, okay, so my body's giving me messages and I'm not really listening to them. It's not that I'm broken. It's actually, okay. And so then, with mindfulness, I started to learn certain breath practices that could help to downregulate my body. I started to meditate every day, maybe not every day to begin with. It took a while actually for me to get into the headspace of then being able to move to the next part.
Yeah.
So then I was meditating on and off, and I was using the Headspace app and, you know, trying to bring these practices into my day to day. And then, training as a counselor and realizing how much my pain was part of my identity. It's all I ever spoke about. And when I was doing my training, we had to write a journal and apply various different counseling modalities to ourselves and explore different parts of ourselves. Yeah. And so that was really powerful, because then I was like, oh my God, this is me. And I started to develop some self-worth and some self-esteem. I started to work through some things and be like, oh, that's why, okay, here's some things from my childhood, or here's some like relating stuff. And then I started to kind of reclaim some self-worth that had just been like in the toilet, because I was, I felt useless to everybody. So then the self-compassion. And then I realized that I needed to work around my fear of pain. So I often didn't do anything because I was so scared of being in pain. So I would just stay at home all the time and do nothing. So I started to work on the fear. So really the first thing was head.
Yeah.
The first thing was mind and understanding, okay, my pain is a message from my body. It's not broken. I need to work with it rather than against it. And I need to not fear it. And so once I kind of, it took me a while, but I got to that space. And then the next part was finding my natural lifestyle coach, who I found through a podcast. Well, although I had started to do some walking, like I would walk the dog, and like I was gradually going on more and more walks and stuff. But really the, like one of the pivotal moments was finding Tony Riddle, who was my natural lifestyle coach. And he was on a podcast and I was listening to it. He was talking about sitting on the floor and barefoot shoes, and he's a endurance athlete, so he's like ripped and he does all these crazy, like he's done Land's End to John O'Groats and all these barefoot events. And I was looking at him thinking, well, that's okay for you, because look how fit you are. Yeah. And, like, you can sit on the floor, like, you know, but what about me? But I listened to the whole podcast and it sat with me, and I couldn't get it out of my head. I was like, okay. And then 2 weeks after I listened to the podcast, which was basically just saying how our bodies aren't designed to sit in chairs, you know, when we sit on the floor rather than in a chair, you know, we can build up more strength in our back, and it's just a more natural, supportive way of existing. So I was like, okay. And then 2 weeks later, I got rid of my sofa. I just like lifted my sofa up. I did this like Hercules moment of like, right, I've had enough. And I just got rid of my sofa, put it in the garage. Yeah, started sitting on the floor. Like at the time, I watched quite a lot of TV, so I would just sit and watch TV on the floor. But I could only sit upright for about 2 minutes, and then I'd have to lie down because it was painful. It's less comfortable sitting on the floor. So I would sit for 2 minutes, and then I'd lie down, and then I'd sit back up again. And then gradually that 2 minutes got longer and longer and longer until I could sit.
Were people like, you got rid of your couch?
Yeah.
Like, were people in your life? What did your kids
think? To be fair, at the time, I didn't really have a lot of people in my life. So I'd left my husband by that point, and I didn't really have any friends, or like a lot of my friends were his friends. A lot of the things we would do would always be with his friends. And I didn't really have a lot of friends because I'd been in pain. So actually, there wasn't really anyone to be judgmental. My kids were like, got rid of the sofa, and they really loved the sofa because it was a really comfy sofa. So they were annoyed at that. they just kind of went with it. But yeah, so I kind of didn't really have anyone there kind of going, what are you doing?
That's kind of nice that you're like developing a do you like experience without the resistance or the shaming or the, you know, although it's painful to have space between us and other. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we actually need that to develop a self.
Yeah.
So here you are like living authentically, mm-hmm. like healing in this practice, which, you know, when we're in that, any type of psychological pain, which I think naturally makes us want to isolate a little bit, it also can be really just helpful to not be in agreements that we've made mm-hmm. with other people about who we are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like even if you were related to people and they're like, how's your pain? Instead, you're now not in dialogue. So you're actually, how's your day? You mm-hmm. know, like there's a different, does that make sense?
Yeah.
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 So you get rid of your couch. You start sitting upright. You start to get better at sitting upright.
Mm-hmm.
And then what? And so, where's your pain, by the way, here? Like, what are we at now? Where normally you were like a 2 to a 10.
So when I first started ground sitting, it would be anywhere between that kind of 2. I was still in pain all the time. So I didn't have any like pain-free moments. So anywhere from a 2 up until, yeah, sometimes it would get up to like a 9. But
are you on painkillers at this point?
Yes.
And are you still on antidepressants?
I don't think so. I think at that time I was on opioids and benzodiazepines.
Yeah.
I think I stopped drinking at that point. I think I'd already stopped drinking because that got to be a real issue.
Yeah.
It was a real problem. Like, I was hiding bottles of wine and drinking a lot, and also drinking whilst on benzodiazepines is not a good thing. So yeah, I wasn't drinking, but I was still on quite strong pain medication at the time. But I don't think I was on the antidepressants, and I'd weaned off of, like, I had all sorts of medications, like anti-seizure medications for pain.
Yeah.
Just really,
they start to use things out of indication when they're like, just throw all of it.
Oh yeah, it was all thrown at me. So yeah, so my pain, it was still variable, but I mean, it was less often in that kind of 9 range, but it would get up to that point at times. So yeah, and then I also transitioned to sleeping on the floor as well. So I sleep on like a mattress topper. So it's like just a thin, almost like a duvet or a comforter kind of thickness. And yeah, so I was sleeping on the floor and sitting on the floor. Really, really quickly, I noticed, oh, I can sit for longer. I started noticing a decrease in my pain and being able to move more. And so I started ground sitting around the July time. And then around October, I started to go running.
It's like 4 months.
Yeah. I joined a local running group, which was like, so we have this thing in a program in the UK called Couch to 5K, which basically takes people from zero fitness to being able to run a 5K in, I want to say like 3 months or something.
Wow.
Might be shorter than that. I can't remember the duration, but it's like a program, and you up your runs every week, and it's a whole program. So they basically did this at this running club. Yeah. And then come the December, I did a marathon.
So from October to December. So wait, that's only 2 months.
Yeah.
So you went from starting to run in October to doing a marathon in December.
Well, I walked the marathon in
Who
December.
Who cares? You still did.
Yeah.
So you went from like when you originally started walking, I remember when we first met, you told me you were like walking around the block or like walking a short distance.
Yeah.
So, but July, you start doing this sitting on the ground thing and all of a sudden you're running a marathon in December.
In 6 months, yeah.
Was that like wild?
Yeah. I still look at the timescale now and go, what? That was insane.
Did you ever think from your pain clinics that you'd be like, they'd be like, sit. It's almost like, again, like funny to think of the Buddhist teacher who says like, sit, meditate.
Mm-hmm.
Really, it's that's the answer,
yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, the whole like yoga is, and you know, the movements is designed to help you be able to sit to meditate, right? So I mean, I wasn't even doing yoga. I was doing some movement. So my my coach teaches a variety of different natural movements. So you don't need to go to the gym to exercise. There are various things that we can do at home that you can incorporate into your day. But I wasn't, to begin with, I wasn't even doing a lot of those. And so it was just, because if you think about it, when you're sat on the floor, you wouldn't realize, but you're getting a hidden workout. Because when you're sat, like I would sit most of the time with my legs crossed, like I am now, but there are various different ground positions. So I might, it's difficult in this chair to do, but I might have my leg up, or I might be
on your knees,
sat like a side sit, or, you know, like my body will tell me when I want to move. So you're kind of moving through these different positions, but also your back is, you know, your muscles are having to work to support you, to keep you upright. And then you're getting up and down off the floor maybe 20 times a day to go to the bathroom and get some lunch or a cup of tea, or, you know, so you're doing that mobility. Whereas if you sit in a sofa, you're just like,
yeah,
you know, and you're not going down all the way to the floor. And getting up and down was a real struggle to start with. I've had to, like, you know, yoink myself up and I'd make this kind of grumbling noise and I'm like, oh, you know, getting up off the floor. Whereas now I'm like, boing, just like, up off the floor, and I can get down without like holding anything. Like I'm up and down off the floor now. So yeah, you're sort of getting this like hidden workout, but you're just sat down. When you're in a chair, all your muscles switch off.
Yeah.
So you're not having to support yourself, and you're maybe ending up in really, like, the way we sit in a sofa is maybe not very good for our back, because we're in these kind of contorted positions that feel comfortable, but actually the body's like, what are we doing? Why are we sitting like this? And then also sleeping on the floor means that there is some level of activation in the muscles because it's not being supported by a mattress. So again, I'm sleeping, but I'm still getting a little bit of a workout. And so I believe that it's the strengthening of those muscles through the ground sitting and the ground sleeping. Because like I said, the scan on my lower back still shows the same level of deterioration. It's just now I'm not in pain. And I also have some core strength, whereas before I had no, like I couldn't do a sit-up or like anything, whereas now, and I haven't spent a load of time doing sit-ups, it's just purely been sitting on the floor and getting up and down. And
do you ever sit in a couch anymore?
No.
Really?
If I, like, there's a sofa out there, right, in the waiting area, and I was able to sit in there with my legs crossed, so I did sit on it rather than sitting on the floor. But if I hadn't, I would have sat on the floor.
Because it just has become so imperative to your health.
It's become the norm for me.
I went, and you know it works.
Yeah, I know it works. I went to a health conference. It was like an all-day thing, like 9 to 5. And I got rid of the chair and sat on the floor at the front. And like everyone else is in chairs, but like they're really uncomfortable chairs. And it's the first thing I said when I came in here today was, I just went, oh, I'm just noticing how uncomfortable that chair is.
Yeah.
Can I have a different chair, please?
It's so interesting because I'm sure people listening, it's like, okay, wait. So you go from seeing all these chronic pain clinics, doctors through the system on opiates, on benzodiazepines, on antidepressants, on anti-seizure seizure medication, many things. Mm-hmm. And then you start getting off those things with different layers of healing.
Mm-hmm. Within 6 months, I was also off all of the pain medication.
Which is wild.
Yes.
It's also wild because you think of, you went from July sitting to October running to December marathon. Mm-hmm. That's insane.
Yeah.
You know, like only thing different than that is when the people in the chair get healed at an evangelical church or something. You know, mm-hmm. We're like, hallelujah. But you must have been at the end of that marathon being like, hallelujah. Like, yeah. Holy shit. You must have been so proud of yourself.
I was, yeah. So the first, I did two marathons. I did one in December and then one in April. So April was the London marathon. So I signed up to do that. And then the marathon in December was a practice run
for the April one?
Yeah, I didn't even mean to do the marathon. It was kind of an accident. If you can accidentally do a marathon. So I actually meant to do a 13-mile half marathon. And I had planned my route around London because I was practicing for, you know, doing the London Marathon. I took a train into London Bridge, which is about 13 miles away from where I live, and did my half marathon, got back to London Bridge and knew it was 13 miles back home, and I just went, I'm going to keep walking. And so I hadn't really even planned to do it. And yeah, I say it now, it sounds nuts, right? Yeah. It just sounds absolutely bonkers. But I just thought, what's the worst that's going to happen? And like, this is
worse
kind of...
you get on a train or in a cab, right?
Whereas before, my mentality was always, oh, I can't do that because what if this happens? Like, what if I'm in more pain? Oh, I can't ask that thing because what if they say no? Like, I would always be this negative, like I wouldn't do the thing. Whereas I was like, what's the worst that's going to happen? I have to get a cab home. I don't finish the marathon. Like, I was on my own. Nobody knew I was doing it. I didn't tell anyone. It wasn't like I was going to like have to tell people, oh, I failed at something. Right. Or like, it was just purely me. But part of the drive to finish it was firstly because, hell yeah, I want to finish a marathon. Right. And actually, I got back to my car and I'd only done 25 miles, which is a mile short. So then I had to like, I was like, I could either, and I was exhausted and I was just like, oh my God. And it was raining and it was dark. It was really cold. And yeah. And I was just like, no one's going to know. Like, I
right.
could, but I was just like, nope. And so I walked around until my watch told me that I'd done the 26 miles. I was like, yeah. And then the telling of people, like the support I got in the, there's like a community of my coach, and I told them in there and they were just like, oh my God, it was so much support.
Well, it's so prolific. And you think like the people in your life who weren't tracking this natural coaching that you're doing, and mm-hmm. they know that you're doing psychotherapy stuff, right? Like mm-hmm. a training, but they're not seeing like the Sam who missed all the events, who they didn't invite to things, who, and then they see this Sam, they hear about Sam.
So I see people now that I haven't seen for a while.
Yeah.
And number one, I move a lot better. I don't immediately go, oh my God, I'm in this much pain. So my conversations are very different. I'm also about 50 pounds lighter because, like, just to say, you know, it wasn't just the psychotherapy and just the, I mean, that those two things were hugely important. The ground sitting and the psychotherapy are probably, and the mindfulness and the mental stuff, that was probably the biggest stuff. But then also to say that, you know, bringing in natural nutrition, being in nature,
yeah,
you know, actually going out, like most of my walks, most of the places I'd go out into the woodlands and be in nature. You know, there are chemicals that we breathe in from trees that help to reduce inflammation and help to calm us. And, you know, so there was that element as well. So yeah, it was a combination of all of these different things. Nutrition was the last thing that came into place for me. And that's been, in the last kind of year and a half is when I've lost. So I lost that 50 pounds in 1 year just from changing my diet to a natural diet and removing processed food and ultra processed food. So yeah, it's been a big combination. But I see people now and the most common thing that people say is, oh my God, you're looking really well. That's like the first thing that people say to me.
What a great feeling that must be.
Yeah. And like, there's quite a big visible change because, you know, I was obese before, like mm-hmm. I was quite overweight. Now I'm not as overweight as I was. So yeah, there's that change. But then also like people say that, you know, the light in my eyes and the way that I talk and, you know, that's completely different as well.
Well, you went from, it sounds like in a state of learned helplessness, like a state of hopelessness
mm-hmm.
where there's a perception that you're broken. To like, actually, there's nothing wrong with me.
Mm.
Actually, my body's brilliant. Oh, now I notice my body. Now I talk to my body. Now I listen to my body. Mm. And then this deep exploration. But also, like, you had such a rapid transformation that I don't know how you could ever be like, I can't overcome anything.
Mm.
Is that even, do you even question that you can overcome anything now? I'm like, not that you want to give yourself any more challenges.
I love challenges. I was having a conversation earlier about the things that pop up in my life that are uncomfortable or things that I really dislike. If I have like a real resistance to something, I'm going there. Like that's the place that I'm going because I know that's where I'm going to learn the most about myself. And like if it, you know, I'm not going to go to places that I don't have you know, like I'm not interested in drinking and gambling, you know, and I'm in Vegas at the minute. And, you know, I'm not like, oh, I'm going to lean into that resistance and go drinking and gambling. Like,
right.
Like,
no, you know, it positive resistance
exactly.
versus that healthy resistance.
Yeah. It's like, okay, I'm just not interested. But if there's certain things that come up that feel really uncomfortable that I think, oh, okay, actually, I think there's a reason why I'm feeling resistance. Yeah. I'm going to lean into that and challenge myself and see what that's about, you know? Like recently I realized that I seem to have a tendency to work with male coaches. Mm. And yeah, it was kind of pointed out to me by a friend, you always work with male coaches. And like when I'm in a lot of spiritual communities, spirituality also is something that's become like a real healer for me. And yeah. And I seemed to develop a resistance to female spaces.
Interesting.
And it was only something that came into my awareness recently because there was an all-female event and I just had this huge, my whole body was like, no, don't want to go to that. No, like I'm even can feel it now, right? And I was like, I need to go.
Yeah, that's beautiful I to need notice to go. That. And then to be like, you know what? If that's true, then I got to lean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so stuff like that, I'm like, okay, that why am I so resistant to female? And, you know, I look at my, like I've had, like male wounding, like a lot of wounding from, past male partners. And I've worked through a lot of that stuff, but I think I haven't worked on the female wounding. So yeah, but I mean, that all like ties in because a lot of my friends were females who, when I was in my pain and also a lot of them were other mothers as well.
Yeah.
And I felt like they were my support network and they kind of abandoned me because like I had pain. So it was like, okay, well, we're just going to disregard. And I can have compassion for them because they've got this really flaky friend who only ever talks about their pain all the right. time and is really uninteresting and quite triggering a lot of the time. And so I have compassion for them. But back then it felt hugely isolating and like a massive wound. And so exploring that now and going to the female spaces and being like, okay, maybe I can trust women again. And it's been a big journey for sure. And I still lean into the discomfort because the uncomfortable sitting on the floor is not comfortable. Well, it is for me now because it's my norm. But when I first started doing it, it was like, I could only sit for 2 minutes. It was awful. Right. But I've learned more from sitting in that discomfort, like literally sitting in the discomfort than like any of the, and it has been the most radical transformation.
Well, it's become your work. Mm-hmm. You know, which I think is really profound, is like you went through the training to understand your own psychology. You went through the coaching to understand your body. You've explored nutrition and you started working with people with chronic pain who maybe never have gone into that system, which might be great, but also maybe this system has failed them. And there's so many people who are in chronic pain, who have fibromyalgia, who have some sort of issue that the system says, we don't know what to do. It's just in your head. Or they don't even say that, but they like give some bullshit. But you can feel them not believing you.
Mm-hmm.
And like you offer this other window through your own journey to be able to walk people through this. So can you tell us a bit about your work now?
Yeah. So I say that I trained to become the therapist and coach that I wish I could have found.
Yeah.
My ideal client is me 7 years ago. And the problem is that me 7 years ago, there's a part of her that would think that me now is full of shit.
Yeah. Right?
That's like, well, you were never in that pain. Like, no, there's no way that, like, because you said, like, this radical transformation in 6 months, it's kind of unbelievable. It's like, it's almost like you say, the healers, oh, you are healed. Like, it is unbelievable. It did happen to me. I know it did.
Right. So your story is evidence that it's possible, but 7 years ago, you'd be like, no way.
Yeah. I'd be like, she's just some wellness asshole that's here, like, you know, that thinks she knows everything and knows how to fix me. And like, I really have so much compassion for me back then and also compassion for the people that are stuck and told that they are in, you know, they're in pain forever. They're going to be disabled forever. There's nothing that the medical system can do. This is their life. They just need to accept it. That was what I was told. And so I come along as some natural lifestyle coach and therapist, and I say, maybe some of these things could work for you. maybe you're not going to believe me. There's going to be an element of skepticism. And also, I spent a fortune on snake oils and, you know, different gadgets that was like, I bought a pen that was supposed to help me with my pain, like something that you put on. I don't know. Like, I bought so many gadgets and gimmicks because I was like searching for it. So, like, you know, someone comes along like me who's like, I don't claim that I can heal anyone. I genuinely, and also I don't heal people. I give people the power to, like, I empower them to heal themselves.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you're going to be pain-free. You know, I'm not a magician. I can't, like, and I can't guarantee that you're going to be pain-free. What I can say is these are the things that help me. What I know about neuroscience and biology and nutrition from my studies, because I have trained in these things to give me credentials to maybe hopefully make people trust me.
Yeah.
So, you know, I do have certificates if people want to see them.
Sometimes we need that just for our brain to give permission.
Yeah.
You know,
definitely
for ourselves, but also for the person who
it was
listening.
Partly for me to be able to say, yeah, okay, I'm a qualified nutrition coach. I'm a qualified psychotherapist. You know, I'm trained in natural movement. I've studied neuroscience. Like I have certificates I can give to you. But actually, my biggest qualification is my experience of being in chronic pain and recovering using these modalities. Like, a lot of people can go and study these things, but not a lot of people have lived through it.
Right, like actually walk through the healing.
Yeah.
I have a friend who had Crohn's, colitis, and went and got like stem cell stuff and like spent all this money and like went into remission and was like, okay, how do I get in remission? And then came back and like big flare, lost tons of weight, almost died. Well, and then he was like, I learned from the wrong people.
Yeah,
I learned from people who didn't know that you could heal from it.
Mm-hmm.
So then he went and all he did was study was from people who healed, and then he healed.
But also my opinion is that the medical system isn't trying to heal us. It's sticky plasters. It's treating the symptoms rather than the underlying cause. For me, the underlying cause was distress in my body.
Yeah.
And when I sat with the down regulation tools, when I sat with understanding, like one of the biggest tools was communication, the way I spoke about myself. So just even saying I'm broken.
Right.
Like, how does that feel in your body? I'm broken. I'm useless. My body's failing me. Like, that's the kind of thing that I would say, you know, and then it moved to, okay, my body is trying to communicate something to me. There's something not quite right. And my body is working with me and I'm not listening to it.
Yeah.
You know, and like I switched my, like even now I try not to say I suffered with pain for 10 years. I lived with pain for 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, like just there
your
can be
language
little
is so
tweaks.
Important.
Like it feels different in your body. And yeah, but then also our communication to other people and how we talk about our pain to other people. Yeah, and just having kindness for ourselves and compassion. But yeah, so the work that I do now is, so I trained as a counselor and I was working with people, you know, kind of, they might have anxiety or depression and kind of would come to me for that. And then it's recently merged into, because I've done all this extra training, because for me, talking therapy wasn't enough. And I was quite shocked in my training as a psychotherapist that we didn't really go into trauma very much. We were talking about anxiety, but we didn't, anxiety and trauma, but we didn't really go into the neuroscience of that. So
yeah,
anxiety.
Talked about that.
Anxiety is such a physical disorder, right?
Yeah.
Well, not even a disorder. I don't even want to call it that. It's,
yeah, response.
It's a anxiety, like you think about anxiety, you think about raised heart rate, you think about sweaty palms, you think about like
your gut,
feelings in
yeah.
your gut, right? That's a physical thing. Whereas I was trained as a therapist to treat people with anxiety. I never did anything. It was all talk. Right?
Yeah.
And talk is great. Don't get me wrong. I love talking. And sometimes having someone listen to your story and validate you, that can be really, really powerful. But if that's all they do, if you go and talk to a therapist, like people would come to me and they talk to me about their anxiety. I did know something about the neuroscience of anxiety. So I would kind of work with that as well. I work very somatically. But then they'd go home and they'd eat a ton of junk food.
Yeah. Right.
Right. And so actually the food we eat, that affects our pain levels, our inflammation, can affect anxiety, depression. What you were saying earlier about the microbiome, we now know the you know, it's the second brain, is the stomach, right? So that's why I went and trained in all these additional things. And so the way I work is very individual. So everybody will be different.
Yeah.
And some people, and it sounds a bit overwhelming. So, you know, I work holistically, I work with the whole body, but we don't have to change everything all at once because that's too much, right? And the whole time, what we want to balance is the stress response, because mm-hmm. that's going to actually affect your pain and your recovery in such a way that if we go, okay, we're going to look at nutrition, we're going to remove all sugar, right? So you're eating, at the minute you're eating loads of sugar, because for me, I used food as a painkiller.
Yeah.
Right. I ate tons of chocolate and cakes and ice cream. And like I would binge on food because I would get the dopamine and that felt like it helped my pain in some way. But if I said to somebody that came to me, right, we're going to get rid of all your sugar. Well, I don't have any other coping mechanism in place to replace that sugar. And my stress level is going to go up and my pain's going to go up.
Right. Makes sense.
So, okay, we know that sugar is not good for inflammation. And ideally, we could eat less sugar. But if we just go straight into that, it's not going to be helpful at all, right? And if I say to you, okay, well, we're going to move to no ultra-processed ingredients. We're going to do completely natural diet, which is how I choose to eat and how preferably we would eat. But if you then have like a bunch of meal prep that you need to do that you weren't used to doing before, and you're like worried about ingredients and you're reading all these labels and you're getting really stressed, like that's really counterintuitive. So often with the nutrition part, I start with adding in rather than taking away, because that can often be easier for people of like, I'm going to add in some healthy foods that are going to nourish my gut. We're going to increase the diversity of plants that we're eating, for example, because that's going to help our microbiome.
Yeah.
So we're going to start with adding in, and then we're going to maybe slowly take some of the other stuff away. And as I'm eating better, I'm feeling better. So I'm going to, but nutrition might not be the first place that we start. In fact, probably it isn't going to be the first place I tend to start with most people, but it is individual. So, but it will be down regulation tools.
That's great.
So working on really simple breath practices, humming. Humming's great. That's one of my favorite things of, like, I will hum quite a lot to myself. Like if I'm just in a stressful situation, humming, movement, right? Dance is one of my favorite medicines, or even just swaying back and forwards. Like there's a part of our brain that we activate when we sway that is involved with pain, right? So actually way back when I was in pain all the time, I would naturally sway back and forth, and I never noticed it before. But then when I learned about swaying and pain, I was like, oh, that makes sense. I was like trying to, like we soothe babies that way, right? It's like this kind of soothing. So yeah, movement, humming, singing, dancing. Yeah, just also really trying to, people that have chronic pain tend to have really bad interoception, which is the understanding of what's going on inside our body. Because it's really hard to go inside your body when you're in pain.
Yeah.
You just want to numb it out.
You
don't want to be in your body. Whereas actually, if you were to have said to me, where does it hurt? I'd be like, everywhere. There's not a single place it doesn't hurt. Okay, do your toenails hurt?
Yeah. So you like start with that level of proprioception of like the understanding of where and what. And so they start to find a pain-free space.
Yeah. And actually one of the, so I have this regular practice that I do now, which is the absence of pain practice. So I will sit, and most days, actually I'm pain-free now, which is just insane.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And I forget sometimes that I used to be in pain. which is great. I mean, how good is it to just forget? But yeah, so most days my practice will be the absence of pain and just full gratitude and appreciation. And I would encourage anybody who doesn't have chronic pain to do this as a daily practice, right? To be like, wow, my body's amazing.
I'm
not in pain right now. Because people who haven't had pain, everyone's had pain, right? Everyone's had different varying, you know, you put your hand on a radiator
injuries,
and burnt yourself as a kid, or you've fallen over and scuffed your knee, or maybe you've broken an arm, or you've had a more serious injury that you've recovered from and it's just been an acute thing. Everyone's had different varying things of pain. So you know what it feels like. But if you haven't had chronic pain, I think sometimes there's not an appreciation for not being in pain. So yeah, that practice. But sometimes I do have pain because I'm a human being, and you know, if I've been really active or whatever, and I do still have the degeneration in my lower back, right? I told you it's still there on the MRI. So occasionally I'll get some niggles in the lower back. And so when I do, I will sit with that and I'll send love and compassion to that part of me and thank it for, okay, thanks for letting me know there's an issue there. I'll do some extra stretching today, or I'll do some extra practice today. And then I'll take my attention to somewhere that feels comfortable. And then, you know, and actually sit with the absence of pain. If you're in that kind of chronic state and everything feels inflamed, it's very difficult to identify where's the pain actually coming from. And so sometimes starting with that, and even if like the first time you sit, like that's the kind of meditation practice, right? Is sitting there and kind of taking your attention inwards and kind of like yoga nidra is a great practice for chronic pain, because you, I don't know if you're familiar with yoga nidra. So it's like a body scan, yeah. And you maybe start with your toes and you work all the way up. And yeah, it's a really great way to be like, okay, is there pain in my toes? No, there's no pain in my toes. Is there pain in my ankles? There's no pain in my ankles. Is there pain in my knees? Yes, there's lots of pain in my knees. And okay, send some love and compassion to our knees. And actually really tuning into where that pain is, and getting a better understanding of our body. So yeah, that might be... That's generally where I start, is with the down regulation, because a lot of the other practices, like if I just go, hey, thanks for coming to work with me, let's sit on the floor.
Right.
That's pretty uncomfortable and pretty stressful. And I might need to use those down regulation practices to sit on the floor.
Yeah.
To keep me, you know, to down regulate, because it might be stressful for me to do that.
Building these extra tools that allow us to find more regulation throughout the day and build up our capacity to then do other things like remove sugar or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I mean, your journey is so inspiring. Like when I first heard it, I was like, what the hell? Like that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But I'm just a regular person, right?
Sure.
I'm just a regular
mom. I love the humility,
you know,
and it's great, but also like pump your tires. That's amazing what you did. I really recognize that like I'm a regular person. Anyone can do what I do. Sure. And it's still profound.
Yeah. Okay. So I will own it.
Like I will pump your tires. You don't have to. It's fine.
I will own it. And I know that like I've had a lot of help along the way. My coach was a massive influence on me, but I fucking did it myself, right? So I will say that I fucking did it. And yeah, I have a lot of gratitude to myself. And yeah, there's a lot of fire and I'm a powerful woman and I feel that. But when I say I'm just a regular person, I say that so that if there's people listening who are like me 7 years ago, who might be listening to this going, well, that's okay for her, but I could never do that, right? She's doing all these marathons. Oh, good for her, but I couldn't do that. Yeah, you can. Because I'm just a regular 100%. Human being. I'm not superhuman. I, you know, had two young children, a failing marriage. Like I was just a regular person. So if I always find it difficult when I'm talking, like I don't want to try and convince anybody. Like I just want to say, this is what worked for me. I can show you if you wanna
That's great.
If you like, wanna do it, that's great.
If you feel called, come.
I don't want to convince anybody, but if there is anyone that's kind of listening, that's kind of thinking, that's just so far, like, because doing marathons, and like, that doesn't need to be your journey. I don't need to coach you to do a marathon. Like, that's, like just coaching you to be able to get up in the morning and look in the mirror and have some self-love, you know, rather than thinking that you're worthless because you're in pain all the time. Like, even if that's the journey, even if, you know, it's just little increments. Yeah, like not all of my clients want to sit on the floor.
Yeah, makes sense.
Or not all of them want to give up their bed and sleep on the floor. They might sit on the floor a bit, you know? And everybody can do that. Like That's even great. If you're not in pain, because we tend to do this reactive thing, don't we? Where it's like we wait until we're in pain before we do anything. So anyone that's not in pain, I would encourage to sit on the floor more, like just at home. I think everyone should sit on the floor and no one should have any furniture, but that's not realistic because that's, you know, everyone wants to have furniture. So maybe if you're sat watching a movie or whatever, do it sat on the floor. Just bring that more as more of a practice into your life and you'll get a little workout and your back muscles will be stronger and your core will start to be stronger just from sitting on the floor.
I noticed having a son that I spend so much more time on the floor and... It feels great, like different hips, openings, all that kind of stuff. Thanks so much for taking and making the time to to come down and share your story, to come to fly. Like, that's such a big deal to me.
Yeah.
I'm really honored by that. And I really wanted to have you on so that people who are feeling stuck or that something is impossible, that's why, like, I get why you've said, I'm just a regular person. You are, yes. And for anyone listening, it is all achievable. And it's especially achievable to be walked through by somebody who's walked it.
Mm-hmm.
Because your life is the evidence of the possibility. And so I'm so grateful that you came and shared your story and the tools and practices. And I encourage for anybody listening or watching to check out more of Sam Fire. And I'm curious, for the people listening, where can they find more of you and get more of your potentials and look at your coaching too?
Yeah, so my website is theholisticpainclinic.com, and I'm also The Holistic Pain Clinic on Instagram. Yeah, so you can just find, there's some information. I'm starting to develop my website to put some like tools out there so people can just look it up themselves. Yeah, if people want to work with me, I do a discovery call, so you can just have a chat with me and see if I can be helpful. And then I have various packages that you can work with me for coaching one-on-one. Hoping to do some group stuff as well, because I think community is really powerful, and talking to other people that have pain. So hoping to do some group stuff soon. So yeah, just reach out and have a chat.
Great. Thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you very much.
If you are absolutely obsessed with wanting to understand how to create epic relationships, then what I'm about to share with you is going to blow your socks off. And that is that we just launched the Create the Love podcast. Now, how is it different? Well, one, it is purely focused on relationships. It is purely focused on developing the skill set to be exceptional at that. And since I know everyone's attention span has gone in the toilet, I made each episode 5 to 10 minutes, little espresso shots of relationship knowledge that you can implement in your life right away. So we've launched with 3 episodes ready for you to consume. You can get it wherever you get your podcast, the Create the Love podcast, or you can go to the link in the show notes. Go check it out. Go subscribe now. You are going to absolutely love it.